Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John. John engineering and producing the show together. A big hearty welcome on this midweek edition. It's Wednesday, the 24th of August, 2022. Can't believe it. We're going to celebrate 12 full years already on the radio by the end of the year. Boy, how time flies, huh? Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. We're so proud that they have the naming rights to our studio on 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk. Worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com, where we piggyback the live feed from KVOI.com. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, and the live line is always open here if you'd like to call and participate in our program, 790-2040. Let's welcome our lead guest today, TUSD Superintendent Gabriel Trujillo joins us. Superintendent, this is the first time in 48 years that Tucson Unified has launched a school year without the shackles and full control of a federal desegregation case. Pretty big deal.
It's a big deal. And hello again, Bill. It's great to be back. And
always a pleasure to have you on the show.
It is an honor to be back now as the superintendent of the newly independently locally governed Tucson Unified School District. The free and autonomous local governance that we've been seeking for 48 years is now upon us. So we are very, very excited about the new landscape.
But what does it mean? There were some financial considerations with this. It did bring a pretty good size payday to the district, didn't it?
It did. So the district receives around $63 million in desegregation funding, largely for efforts to comply with the former court order. And you can look at it two ways. Number one, it is a funding source that we utilize to do a lot of great things, to spread a lot of student opportunities and access throughout the district, largely through magnet programming, incentivized transportation, the arts, accelerated learning opportunities with honors and AP and gifted and talented. But then also, it's a tax that's been imposed on our homeowners without any kind of a bond or override election that has created an additional hardship for a lot of working class families and families, period, and property owners residing inside of the Tucson Unified School District's 229-mile zone.
It's a huge district.
It's a huge district, and there's also a significant portion of these desegregation funds that I've said in the past have been used in areas that have nothing to do with student programming or teacher support.
Like what?
Attorney's fees, mandatory consultants, mandatory reports, hundreds of thousands of dollars paid to a special master appointed by a federal court, tens of thousands of dollars spent on implementation committee requirements.
Wow.
There was a lot of, I'll say, fat that we're very proudly now going to be taking a look at in the 23-24 school year. Obviously, the desegregation budget for this school year is set. We're not going to make any changes because we had to finalize that budget prior to the judge's ruling. But we're gearing up to take a look at it, how we're spending these dollars, how much of this budget can be immediately shifted back to the schools, and how much we can potentially look at possibly reducing the levy for 23.
Yeah, that was my next question. Yeah. When would we see the property tax owners not see that on our bill?
Well, the entirety of the $63 million is not going to go away overnight.
It could be a 5-year deal.
It could be a multi-year deal because we certainly want to continue to maintain and sustain and expand all of the programs that have made Tucson Unified one of the most desegregated districts in the state. Now, do we still have areas where we have predominantly African and American and Latino communities and schools? Yes, but that's more of a census-related phenomenon with regard to neighborhood demographics than it is school demographics. But when you have pretty much close to a quarter of the entire district attending schools where no major subgroup is over 65%, and I'm talking Anglo, African American, Hispanic/Latino. That's a tremendous accomplishment. And that's made possible by a lot of the programs inside of the Unitary Status Plan. So we don't want to give those up and find ourselves back under court supervision. But at the same time, we're going to be making the goal of finding ways to relieve the burden on the taxpayer while still significantly increasing the amount of dollars we have flowing into the schools instead of lawyers' fees.
Who could have ever imagined nearly a half century ago when this thing began? Look at the educational landscape right now with so-called charter schools and what's called empowerment scholarships. It's a different ballgame.
It's an entirely different ballgame, and we are now finding ourselves in a very hyper-competitive, almost private sector-like environment where you have different entities competing for the same customer base. And it feels very much like a business environment. And if you're going to be in a business environment, you need to have total and complete freedom and autonomy to make the kinds of moves that you need to be innovative and creative and to match what your competitors are offering students. We can do that now, Bill. The court order is no longer upon us.
Yeah.
Under the court order, you couldn't sell a vacant school unless you had a federal judge's approval. You couldn't open a new grade level at a school until you had the federal judge's approval. Couldn't open a school, couldn't open a new school, couldn't close an existing school. You couldn't merge schools. You couldn't adjust your teacher evaluation system. You couldn't adjust your student disciplinary code of conduct handbook. You couldn't do any of these things until you actually had a signed court order. And now with that very restrictive and oppressive infrastructure gone, we can now move more nimbly to say, okay, charter school, okay, private school, we're happy to do battle with you in the open market. Let's do it. We've got bells and whistles. We've got resources. We've got a deep bench. We're here to play and compete.
Wow. So the management plan, this is like for you as the manager of this huge district, this is a whole new ball game.
It's a whole new ball game. You know, we're not anti-school choice. I constantly remind people that from year to year, we average about 15,000 or 16,000 families coming into TUSD outside of their neighborhoods. So it's not like we're an anti-school choice district. If we're going to be in a school choice environment, give us the tools and the resources and the freedom that we need to compete. We've always asked for that, Bill, and now we have it, being free of court supervision.
So what do your numbers look like 3 weeks into this school year?
Well, we're 3 weeks into the school year, and we're down about 300 students. And that kind of matches the trend around Pima County. In my conversations with other superintendents are dealing with the same issues, reporting that their districts are down slightly as well. We are taking a look at what the impact has been on our enrollment situation right now at present. The impact of ESSA. Of families accepting empowerment scholarship accounts. We're looking at the impact of migration to Phoenix. We're looking at the impact of migration to private and charter schools, cutting into our enrollment here a little bit. Families hesitant to come back in person. So we will be facilitating a pretty informative governing board presentation at our September 20th meeting, where we're going to take a look at our enrollment situation a little bit more in depth.
Was there some more money on the table for much-needed substitute teachers?
Yes. Last night, we increased our governing board, took the step of increasing the rate in some of our hardest-to-fill schools where we've been struggling to book substitute teachers for coverage assignments. I mean, some of these schools, Bill, 30%, 40%. We had one school as low as 20%. Being able to cover 20% of their vacancies. That's 80% of classroom jobs in need of a sub going unfilled.
Wow.
So what we did is we proposed for this roughly the group of 25 schools, we're going to be raising whether or not the sub is in a daily situation or in a long-term situation. We're going to raise their rate by $25.
Good.
So we're going to see if that provides some instant relief, some much-needed relief to our hardworking teachers that find themselves covering two classes at once or losing their preparation hours because they've got to work extra sections, to try to give that time back to some of our teachers.
Some of these areas just are critical to fill, like math education, secondary math education. You actually had to, the district had to go to a third-party group that I guess specializes in finding these people?
Well, we're starting to see where the teachers are going, right? Because what we're experiencing now is a phenomenon of private sector vendors coming in and saying, you need a teacher, we have one. And then we run into a teacher that either used to work in Pima County in one of the school districts or used to be our employee.
Are these like headhunters?
Who are now making $70,000 or $80,000 a year, a salary that we can't pay them.
Sure.
And now coming in to work for us as a contracted private vendor.
Okay. And
it's a new phenomenon, and it's a wake-up call for this legislature and for the governor's office to see what happens when you pay teachers well. They're coming in making $70,000, $80,000. We say, would you like to work at TUSD? They're saying, well, you can't afford us.
Mm-hmm.
So it's we've had to turn to this vendor for five positions that are highly qualified in math instruction, and that's where we're going to be primarily using these vacancies. When you're talking about math, you're talking about algebra readiness, and algebra readiness is a key core competency that is needed going into high school. Okay. It's also needed to make sure that our students are doing well, whether it's the ACT or it's the new Arizona Academic Skills Assessment. You can't have a non-mathematician in the classroom teaching students.
Yeah.
An everyday sub is not going to do it.
No.
So we have to go get a highly qualified professional math educator, and that's what we've had to do.
You can't have somebody that can hardly handle their checkbook in there. They wouldn't want me in there in that position. All right, we're going to pause right here with Dr. Gabriel Trujillo. 790-2040 is our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Lots to talk about as a new school year gets underway. Is it the first school year back to kind of normal? We'll ask the doctor about that after this.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Helping you make better money decisions is what The Ramsey Show is all about. Today at 1 p.m. on 1030 The Voice.
All right, midweek edition of The Buckmaster Show. It's always a pleasure to welcome back to The Buckmaster Show Gabriel Trujillo. Dr. Trujillo is superintendent of Tucson Unified School District. This kind of feels like the first somewhat normal year going back to fall of 2019.
This is probably the most normal it has felt since the fall of 2019. The excitement of the first day of school, you smell the newness of the backpacks and the notebooks and the new shoes coming and walking through the halls when you see the kids, football practice in full gear, kids out on the field, in service, in person again. It has that feel, that excitement, the electricity of a first 3 weeks of school. Absolutely. So, I mean, and we're looking forward to it. We're looking forward to a successful pivot from reacting to and managing and trying to navigate our way through a pandemic to being able to comfortably and effectively live with an endemic, much like we do with a flu or any other virus that we deal with, albeit a sickness that's a lot more deadly.
Yeah,
but I think through our mitigation efforts that we've committed to, I think through it's around a 60% vaccination rate for TUSD's workforce. So more than the majority of us have been double vaxxed and have received the booster, which is a good thing. Getting some institutional commitments from our employees and from our parents, keep your kids home, stay home if you're sick. I think we're going to be okay.
It's a different world now with security. School districts like TUSD have to have a huge security presence. You've got to have a security package as part of your budget. What does that scene look like right now with your officers on your force?
Well, we have a little bit of an advantage. TUSD has the only organized school safety force in Pima County and one of the only ones in the state. And we are in our school safety force. They're fully armed. They do carry sidearms and they've got tasers. And I know that doesn't sit well in some sectors of our community, and that's okay. You know, we receive their critiques, their feedback, but our officers are very well trained, very well equipped.
It's a highly professional group, though.
It's a very highly professional group, and our school board recently voted to expand school safety by 5. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be adding 5 additional officers so that we can have at least one officer embedded inside of our high schools on a full-time basis, and that they'll champion professional development and training for crisis and emergency response.
You had that nasty incident over at, was it Tucson High, where
Tucson
a parent
High.
Came to
yeah.
to the campus. What was the deconstruct on that when you guys went back to the table? What lessons were learned there?
Well, we're moving forward. You know, I think I've been pretty public about my disappointment with the actions of the parent. But we also had to take ownership of some of our gaps in terms of parent access. And this year, we're tighter. We've got tighter procedures in our schools. We've got parents now, you better be signing in. You're going to be walked to where you're going.
Mm-hmm.
You don't roam the campus freely. If you're a volunteer, we have a clearance card on you. Yeah, we know that you're here for a specific reason. We've got some tighter protocols in play now that I think are going to help us be a little bit more confident.
We talked about teachers and substitutes, but some of the teachers, the full-time teachers,
are having to do double duty, aren't they? They're having to kind of, where they can, combine some class work.
That's a huge challenge for us right now. The two biggest ones are the teacher vacancies, which have resulted in teachers having higher class sizes, teachers having to work during their teacher preparation hour, which is a big concern. And then we have teachers actually doubling up. And you'll have situations around the district where a second grade teacher with maybe 15 students will have to take on a class of first grade students that might be a class size of 12 or 13. Now they've got a full 28 kids in a class and they're running two different grade levels. Our board took action last night to compensate them and to give them some extra pay for being able to do that, as well as counselors. We've got some counselors now that have assumed student caseloads of as much as 1,000. One counselor for 1,000 students,
what?
One counselor for 800 students because of counselor vacancies. So last night our board took action to give them some additional compensation as well for the extra duties.
You know, earlier you were talking about the desegregation order. I didn't realize you couldn't close a school. You couldn't open a new school without these strings attached and the signing of the grand master of this deseg thing had to sign off on this. So now, will you be looking now at each school?
Well, what we're going to be doing,
kind of an inventory of where you're at?
Where we need to be more competitive, Bill, is middle school. We have prioritized middle school as an area of both instructional and structural reform. Our team right now is working on some proposals that we will be presenting to our board later on in the fall. And we will be fully transparent with the public. We will involve the public in a lot of the working sessions that are going to be forthcoming around the challenges that face our middle schools. Our middle schools are leading the way, and not in a good way, with teacher retention issues, student discipline, academic achievement, and enrollment loss. So the public is very clearly telling us that we're not competitive, we're not fielding the highest quality product with regard to middle schools.
Why is middle school this big issue?
Middle school has been an issue around the state. I think it's hyper pronounced in TUSD because our parents have so many other options. But one of the things that we know about middle school is if you don't nail down algebra readiness, if you don't have students reading at grade level, you are fighting an uphill battle for high school graduation. You are fighting an uphill battle for college and career or military readiness even coming
out
of high school.
Sounds like you're setting the table for their future there.
You are. Yeah, you are. And middle school is such a crucial period in a young person's life. It's that gap between childhood and adolescence.
Yeah, it is.
Where you have some very, very rich opportunities to expose kids to the arts, to athletics, to extracurriculars. And any work that you're going to do with algebra readiness and with literacy, that's your last chance before you hit high school. So we're going to be working on that as a priority this fall.
And the catch-up from the pandemic years in some areas like reading and math.
There's been some bright spots, Bill. When our numbers came back, our student achievement results from the new Arizona Academic Skills Assessment, We saw the brightest spots in math with,
you're kidding,
with third, fourth, and fifth grade. We had double-digit gains in terms of, I believe it was 9, 10, and 11% more proficiency than we had a year ago with the old AZ merit. And what that shows us, Bill, is the best method for addressing learning loss is actually putting our students back with in-person instruction. And that's what the difference maker was. Because when you look at what's different, well, what was different is our students were back with our teachers and benefiting from that live in-person instruction. So we know that that's a tremendous asset in TUSD that we're going to have to capitalize on.
Is there still an online component to your district?
There is an online component, and there probably always will be because that's kind of part of the new normal. We're holding steady at about 1,000 students that have enrolled in the Tucson Unified Virtual Academy. So we're going to continue to offer that. Our board has to make a decision for the upcoming school year as to how they're going to continue to fund it, as our American Rescue Plan funds will run dry at the end of the 24 fiscal year.
What about employment opportunities for perhaps people who are retired? They'd like to be a school bus driver.
We want you. Yeah, we need employees all over the map. If you're out there and you're listening.
Will you help the people in their licensing?
We will pay for your licensing.
What?
Yeah, we put you in class. We certify you as an individual eligible to apply for a commercial driver's license. We offer the classes. Our transportation department teaches those classes free of charge. We'll cover your pre-employment costs. And now if you're out there listening, you want to be a bus driver, mm-hmm. you want to work in our before and after school programs, we are in desperate need of supervisors to supervise kids that are in these programs. As you know, we're offering free childcare throughout the year, free of cost to any mm-hmm. family. Mm-hmm. We have wait lists now, so it's a race to open up additional sites.
But folks can make a little extra money.
They can make a little extra money, absolutely. And now with the new minimum wage in TUSD being $15 an hour, it's a little bit of a better payday for some folks.
So go to your website prior to your, human resources or what, for job openings?
If you go to our main page, it says mm-hmm. careers. Right at the top banner of our webpage, just click that. And we have all kinds of opportunities for you.
All right. We'll talk to you as we get into the fall. Thank you very much, Dr. Trujillo, and hope all goes well this school year.
Yeah, thank you very much for the well wishes, and look forward to my next visit, Bill.
Thank you very much. We'll take a break right here. Buckmaster Midweek Edition in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We're in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. I do a little gardening, and I like to look out at beautiful green things in the backyard. And the place to go to get the beautiful plants, I think, and a lot of people agree with me, is Green Things, 3384 East River Road. Conveniently located, they're over there by the Rito River, which I'm not sure is still running water, but it was pretty impressive last weekend. Just west of the Brandy Fenton Park, 13-acre site. I love it over there. It's beautiful. They've got not only every imaginable plant that you could put in the ground here in the desert, they also have some beautiful merchandise that is beautifully curated by Jan and Jack, the owners. They go down to Mexico. They bring back this credit. They don't physically bring it back, but of course they buy it and then it's shipped back. Talavera pottery, beautiful things. It's greenthingsaz.com and then zocalovillage.com. They're in their 52nd year of business. They're open daily. All right, joining me in studio, Dr. Albrecht Clausen, University Distinguished Professor and Director of Outreach in the Department of German Studies at the University of Arizona. He has a very broad range of research interests covering the history of medieval and early modern German and European literature and culture from about 800 to 1800. He's also involved in contemporary literature, writing poetry and prose. He's published hundreds of scholarly articles and book citations, translations, and textbooks, including a handbook of medieval studies. I don't know when this man ever sleeps. I mean, he's just constantly working and crafting a new paper. He had a recent one about the Middle Ages didn't just suddenly end. They transitioned up until much more later than people would have thought. We'll talk about that maybe in a minute. But he has so many honors. The latest honor, he's now been named a Fulbright Scholar. And other honors, Grand Knight, Commander of the Most Noble Order of Three Lions in recognition of outstanding services to German studies. He's the newest member of the 5-member Arizona Humanities Board of Director. His latest two books are Incarceration and Slavery in the Middle Ages and Early Modern Age. That's a cultural historical investigation of the dark side in the pre-modern world. I think we discussed that a couple of sessions ago with the professor. And then
most recently, and correct me if I'm wrong, Wisdom from the Middle Ages, that's the latest book, right?
That's the one before the last one, yes.
Well, I always want to get that right, and we did in your last visit touch a little bit on that. Now, we have lots to talk about. You are just back from 7 weeks on the beautiful Middlebury campus in Vermont, Middlebury College, where you were, well, 7 weeks there. Why Middlebury? What's so special about that? First of all, welcome back.
Thank you so much, Bill. I'm very happy to be here on the show. It is really great. I'm always enjoying our conversations, and I feel greatly honored that you show so much interest in my work. It really helps me also to reach out to the public and give sort of a
sense. Yeah, it's good outreach for you. Yeah.
For both of us. Yeah. And so I really appreciate this forum you set up.
All right.
So as to your question, Middlebury is really a fantastic little college with world renown. I would say they have the number one summer language schools. So if you want really to learn very fast, let's say Hebrew or Korean or Spanish, or in my case, German, then that would be the place to be. It's very, very hard, extremely demanding. You have to swear an oath for the next 7 weeks not to speak one word of English.
What?
So 24/7, only the foreign language.
And that's called immersion.
Total immersion. Just imagine the poor people who barely start with German or Hebrew, whatever it might be, and at breakfast, brushing their teeth, hiking, only their target language. It is an incredible experience. And you would not believe it after maybe 2 weeks or so, even the weakest people begin suddenly to voice very well formulated sentences. So it's a phenomenal experience, but very tiring, that's for sure. That's great, yeah.
Are some languages easier to learn than others?
Well, I would say the other way around. I think Chinese or Hebrew or Arabic are very difficult languages. They require about 3 to 4 as much time as, let's say, the standard European languages.
But in the Europe, let's just talk about, I would think some of those Asian languages would be very difficult. But the European languages.
Right. So, okay, I'm biased, of course, since I teach German, so I think that's the most interesting language. Anyway, but I've learned Spanish, I've learned Italian, speak English, I know my French, I know my Latin. So once you start looking into any of these languages, and they're all kind of related, you begin to see this basic structure. But I would say when I started learning Latin as a student, then I began to understand what language is even all about.
And it helped you.
Absolutely, it gave me structure. But just recently, I was asked by some of the students, what is the best approach? And I said, no. You don't need to ask what's the best approach. You need to ask yourself what kind of learner you are. How do you learn? Some are more orally oriented. Others are more visual oriented. For others, it's a combination thereof. And so once you understand who you are, you can learn any language, really.
I took quite a bit of Spanish. I think we started in junior high, 7th and 8th grade. Then I took 4 years in high school and then 2 years in college. I found it easier to write the language than I guess I would be considered more of those that would find it easier on the written side than the verbal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But even with Spanish, there's, a very strong myth. I mean, I've learned Spanish and I speak Spanish fairly well, but put me into a different context, suddenly I have a hard time understanding once again.
Yes.
Because there's so many different dialects and accents and regional forms of Spanish. And Spanish becomes very quickly a very complicated language. So there's a misconception in the public that Spanish is just an easy language to learn.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
It's easy to get in, but as soon as you're in, you suddenly go all the way up, and it gets very complicated.
And I heard you say something, rather than move on to our next topic, I want to circle back to that, which you believe German is the most interesting, and briefly, why is the German the most interesting?
So I was teaching, for example, in Middlebury, primarily literature, so from Middle Ages to the present. But of course, I had always to explain grammatical features. And sometimes the students got so excited because I could explain the system. And I said, it's just like a binary system, like every computer. And it works just as very mechanical, very, very logical. Of always there are exceptions, always exceptions.
Of course.
But once you know a language well, that means you can explain it well. And I personally love explaining difficult structures. I had students who just met me in the evenings and I gave them an extra hour just to go over some grammatical features. And that was the most amazing experience. And they loved it and I loved it.
When you met them in the evening, were you speaking just German?
Only in German, absolutely.
Wanted to try to catch you there because yes. You said even in the morning when you're brushing your teeth or
only
whatever.
Only the language. Only the target language.
All right.
Absolutely.
Okay. Before we take a break, this is a really serious thing. You've been translating the diary of a German woman, a Jewish German woman from Ulm in Germany. Is
yes.
that correct?
The town is called Ulm. Yeah.
Ulm. Mm-hmm. U-L-M.
Right.
Now, this woman survived one of the concentration camps.
Yeah,
right?
It's called Theresienstadt, which was not necessarily for extermination, but hundreds of thousands of people died there anyway.
Now, you translated her diary, basically,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, right.
And what was that experience like?
Well, I mean, the translation was hard, but I really have to sigh here to indicate.
Yeah, I'm hearing what you. This is a very emotional thing for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I mean, this is all well known, but at the same time, to read these statements by a woman, all the details and the horrors and the attitude of the Nazis, the SS, and how they just summarily killed thousands of people or sent them off into Auschwitz to die. Children, young, old, it was just horrendous. So it was a great experience for me to read this, a really first-hand document, and I'm very proud that I did it. But it's painful, very, very painful.
Well, it must have been horrifying, but what about analogies?
Well, that's really the most devastating thing. So apart from the diary, I also translated a very, very long, detailed historical analysis. Why and how was it even possible? And that's where it gets really under your skin, because you suddenly see the analogies. You see suddenly the collective attitude, how that is changed and how, like poison, it permeates the entire society, leading to total neglect, a disregard, demeaning social minority groups, accepting stereotypes, prejudice, and suddenly following the ideology which is spewed forth by public media. Like, I mean, I don't want to say any media, what I'm talking about, right?
I know.
There's a lot of really ugly hate spewing public media today, which work just the same way as at that time.
What about Holocaust deniers? It seems like they're gaining strength, unfortunately.
I hear this as
how
well.
How anybody could be a Holocaust denier, but they're out there.
Yeah, they are. And we actually know people ourselves. We had somebody who worked in our house, and once he started spewing forth on Facebook that he didn't believe in the Holocaust, we decided, well, we cannot really work with this man anymore.
No.
It is just very, very unfortunate. But I think this is a widespread attitude, whether it's Holocaust deniers or people who believe that the election 2020 was faked or frauded. This is an absurd collective neurosis or maybe hypnosis where you suddenly can no longer argue with these people rationally. This is really hard for me. I'm an academician. I work as a scholar. And suddenly there are massive numbers of people whom you can no longer reach logically. This is terrible.
All right, we'll take a break right here. More with Dr. Clausen after we take a break on the Buckmaster Show. Be right back.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the DoubleTree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
Visit The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Helping you make better money decisions is what The Ramsey Show is all about. Today at 1 p.m. on 1030 The Voice.
Welcome back. It is The Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. One of our great sponsors, they're all great sponsors, but Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, we send so many of our listeners over there, and they always come back and they say, Bill, I had no idea. That's such a beautiful area of New Mexico, and it's only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson. Especially beautiful this time of year. Look at that, 74 degrees midday over in Silver City, New Mexico. A lot to do over there. If you're into history, the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument is just north of Silver City. There's some great places to stay, great places to eat in Silver City. There's a lot of Victorian architecture in Silver City that I think you will just enjoy the whole atmosphere. Their website is southwestnewmexico.org for where to stay and what to do. You're going to have a great time. Let's continue now with our conversation. Dr. Albrecht Clausen is with us, University Distinguished Professor, Director of Outreach in the Department of German Studies at the University of Arizona, and newly minted Fulbright Scholar. He was with us a couple of months ago. We try to bring him in every quarter, and I think the news, he had just received the news that he is had been named a Fulbright Scholar. That's a huge honor. How long has that been around, the Fulbright Scholars?
Not quite sure. I would think about 70 years by now. Senator Fulbright established that.
Yeah, but it's a great honor. Anybody in academia like yourself, it's you know.
It's one of the highest honors you can get.
Yeah. News from academia. This comes out of the University of Michigan. You work with a lot of manuscripts.
That's right.
And this is of interest, I'm sure, to you and our listeners. A prized manuscript that was in the University of Michigan Library that was believed to have been written by the famed Italian astronomer, Galileo. It's a forgery, the university said today. The paper, actually, the so-called Galileo manuscript, can be traced to about 1930, and it was likely written by a notorious Italian forger. So obviously it's not from the 17th century. but you work with a lot of these mm-hmm, documents. Mm-hmm. How this particular man that questioned, he was a professor, is a professor of history at Georgia State University. He questioned what was the tip-off to him was the manuscript's watermark and provenance. So that really led him to believe there were some problems with authenticity.
Well, first of all, the nice thing is that these medieval and early modern manuscripts or early printed books are highly appreciated. I mean, this is a very valuable product.
Yeah.
Even here at this, our University of Arizona, our special collections, we have lots and lots of incunabula early printed books, and they are extremely valuable. So there is, oddly, as much as our society seems to move further along and further away from the past, we begin to appreciate these documents. So they have a high value. It's just like artwork or sculptures or cathedrals. So manuscripts just as well. And so naturally, anyone who has a skill as a scribe can really imitate mm-hmm. that fairly easily. I mean, think about the forgery of Hitler's diary, for example.
Oh, yeah.
There was a very famous case.
Sure.
The more there is money behind it, the more than these highly trained or skilled forgers come to work.
I'm trying to think of the German newspaper that paid out a fortune for the so-called Hitler diaries.
Absolutely. It was Bild at that time. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So that makes good sense in somebody who can simply imitate the hand of that time and who has maybe studied Galileo can easily imitate that. The problem for him was that the paper was not quite the right quality. But of course, you could even use old paper and scratch out the text. So suddenly, it's even almost a perfect forgery.
Now, you mentioned the University of Arizona Special Collections, and I know occasionally you do lectures about some of the manuscripts over there. They've got some pretty interesting stuff, don't they?
Well, yes. They have a safe, and most of the public have never been there.
No.
It's, like a bank.
Like a vault. A vault.
A real vault with a steel door that is that thick.
Wow.
Half of a foot thick steel door to protect these books they have there. It's a huge collection. Of course, there's a lot of early modern texts, very few really medieval texts, but a lot of facsimiles. And so we do once a year in spring, always an early book lecture series. We bring out some of the best or most interesting or most richly illuminated manuscripts and just present them and discuss them for the public. We just had a whole series last spring. I think always sort of 70, 80 people came.
Was that the Book of Kells?
That's what I presented once.
The Irish book, very famous.
See, the irony is that if you go there to Lindisfarne.
To Trinity College. I've seen it over in Dublin where the original one is.
Yes.
So but this is like one of the originals, right?
Yeah, but then in Dublin, you might be allowed one page per week or so.
They have like one page on display,
exactly.
I remember.
Exactly. Yeah. And here you show your ID. And you get the whole thing, and you leave through it whatever you want to do the whole day.
Why was that such a big deal, this Book of Kells?
Well, it's one of the oldest Irish texts, and it's the Bible, of course, and it's extremely richly illuminated, so it's one of the greatest Irish treasures. But now there are facsimiles, and we do have a facsimile, which looks exactly like the original. So you could say it's a forgery, but no, it's identified as
a facsimile. It's well identified. Okay, in the remaining minute or so, there's some big news also in academia today. The president has said that student loans will be forgiven in certain circumstances, I believe, up to $10,000. Mm-hmm. You have been in academia, a university environment. I'm just curious about your thoughts.
Well, we all know that we have an ever-growing number of students, and I think we have a record number of freshmen this semester, once again, fall semester 2022. And, of course, they come increasing also from a social background where they just don't have that money. So I think it's extremely important. If we want to guarantee our future as a nation, as a community, as a society, we need students to get educated. So if we don't value and treasure education, then I don't know what we are as a society. So I think this is a brilliant move. I can only praise the president for doing this. This is really a support to improve the life of everyone in our society.
I've only got about 30 seconds, but I did say at the beginning of the interview that you said that the Middle Age, people think the Middle Age is just suddenly ended. They didn't.
No, of course not. Lots of materials and themes and interests continue for a long time, maybe hidden, many times rather hidden. And so my job is right now to uncover some of the medieval themes. And lo and behold, I can trace a lot more than we have ever thought was available.
Into the 20th century?
No, hiatus, let's say 1600 to 1800 or so.
All right, Dr. Clausen, always a pleasure. We'll catch up with you in a couple of months. Good luck with the new semester.
Thank you so much, Bill.
That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of the professor and John, engineering and producing the show, my name is Bill Buckmaster. Always enjoy our time together. We'll be back in about 23 hours. Hope you have a great afternoon.